This episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. To see how FreshBooks can save you time and boost your creativity, go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter Accidental Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Well, hey friends, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. I'm the founder of Accidental Creative. I'm also the author of several books, The Accidental Creative, Die Empty, Louder Than Words, and Herding Tigers. And on this show, we talk about you. We talk about your creative process. We talk about how to be prolific, brilliant, and healthy in life and in work. And today's show features someone who has extensive experience herding tigers, helping create an environment in which teams can thrive. His name is Jason Fried. He's the co-founder of Basecamp, which is a phenomenal tool for managing projects and teams. He's also the co-author of several books, including Rework and his new book, It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work. And so this conversation with Jason is fascinating because he is someone who has built a company from the ground up to be the kind of company that he always wanted to work for. And also, he was able to break some rules and just kind of do things the way that he thought would be best and build the company in the way he thought would produce the best end result, both for the employees of the company, but also for the people that are served by Basecamp. And so on this show, I just talk with him about what have you discovered about creating organizations that work well, not just today, but work well over the long run. What are some things that people and teams do that you find to just be maddening? And what are some maybe counter strategies for dealing with that? And we also delved into a little bit about what inspires him, where he gets ideas, what his personal process looks like. It was just a really, really fascinating conversation with Jason. So we're going to jump into that in just a minute. Before we do, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. So as creative pros, we're in the business of turning clever ideas into customer value. That's what we do. But the thing is, great ideas and great creative work takes time to cultivate. And running a business, especially if you're running a business on your own, it doesn't always provide time to do the kinds of work necessary to generate great creative work. And that's where our sponsor FreshBooks can help. FreshBooks is accounting software designed for creative pros like you and like me. It's so easy to use. You'll save 16 hours a month on time-consuming admin and paperwork, which means more time to let creativity flourish. And FreshBooks is packed with time-saving features. You can create and send branded invoices in about 30 seconds. It is so easy. You can set up ACH and credit card payments right there on the invoice to get your invoices paid up to 2 times faster. You can snap photos of your receipts from your phone to make managing expenses a million times faster. So when tax time rolls around, you can export tidy reports for expenses, invoice details, and sales tax to make working with your accountant a breeze. And the great thing about FreshBooks is it's all branded like your business. You can easily create custom invoices that look like you, that feel like you, that have your messaging, and it's completely transparent to your customer. So allocate more time to creating and let FreshBooks do the boring accounting and bookkeeping stuff. You have better things to do with your time, things that are going to actually enable you to create value for your customers. Right now, I'm offering listeners of the Accidental Creative Podcast 30 days of FreshBooks absolutely free. No credit card required. Just go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter Accidental Creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's freshbooks.com/accidental and enter Accidental Creative to get 30 days of FreshBooks absolutely free. And we thank FreshBooks for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's great to have on the show today, Jason Fried. Jason, welcome to the Accidental Creative Podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
So you are the co-founder of Basecamp. You're the author of a bunch of books now at this point. One of the things that I love about you and about your voice is that you're kind of a fierce advocate for shifting the way that we think about work today. So where did that desire to change the world of work come from for you?
Well, you know, I don't think I originally desired to change the way we work. I just kind of eventually realized that someone needed to, or someone needed to start. I mean, of course, I'm not going to take credit for trying to change work, but I've had a number of jobs over the years, and at every job, I had a certain experience, sometimes good, sometimes bad. And this goes all the way back to high school. And I sort of realized that it'd be nice to create the kind of company that you want to work at. because even though I own the place, I work here, you know? So I wanted to create a company that I wanted to work at. And it just turned out that, you know, I didn't want to be, you know, bothered all the time or interrupted constantly. I didn't want to be in a place where people didn't trust me. I didn't want to be in a place where other people weren't trusted. I didn't want to be in a place where people weren't valued. I didn't want to be in a place where people weren't paid fairly, et cetera. Like all these things. And you just realized, hey, I don't have to create an environment that's bad. I can create a good environment. And then from doing that, you know, we're able to share what we've done with others. And hopefully that has some influence in other workplaces as well.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of people probably have that desire or that observation. Hey, I want to create a place that I want to work. And yet still so many people don't do it. they don't make the effort to do that. Why do you think that so many people get stuck in that place of, I would really love to do this, but we have to be practical about our organization?
I think it's because people don't really think enough about their company as a product, essentially. Mm-hmm. They're not thinking about it that way. What they're thinking about is, you know, landing the next, and I, by the way, I understand these pressures, but sure. Thinking about landing, if you're a consultant or a design firm or whatever, and you do client work, you're thinking about landing your next client. You're thinking about making the client happy. You're thinking about, you know, how to pay your people, all these things. And what ends up happening is you end up oftentimes rushing. If you grow too fast, you're in the red. So, you know, it's hard to be calm and organized when you're not sure if you're going to make payroll. Kind of get ahead of yourself in terms of feeling like you need to be bigger than you are. And a lot of the other things take precedence and then what happens is that what you've done is you've built a place where people are rushing or people are working excessive hours where it's just like whatever it takes. You've built a whatever it takes environment. And when you've built a whatever it takes environment, like all these other things fall apart. You don't really care about how people feel at work. You don't really care about how many hours they work, except that they should be working as often as possible. When you start answering emails or responding to clients at 11 o'clock at night, well, then you've created an environment where it's very difficult to you know, be calm and think about work. So I think what happens is that a lot of workplaces happen to the company. They aren't expressly created in a chaotic way, but that's what ends up happening if you don't make distinct choices and put some values ahead of growth.
And even when people are told, hey, by the way, you know, don't check your email at 11 o'clock at night, or don't feel the need to like burn through your vacation and not take vacation time. Like people still do that, right? Even when companies try, like, why do you think it's so hard for us to just let go and to embrace those natural, healthy rhythms?
It's a really good question. There's a number of reasons I would throw out there, although there's probably a number of additional ones. One is people follow. So if leadership is the one, you know, the business owner or your manager or whatever, if they're the person who is sending you an email at 11 o'clock at night, then, you know, a lot of people feel pressured to answer that email because it's their owner or the, you know, the manager or something like that. If you get an email or a conference call is called on a Sunday, like it's hard to say no when the person who signed your checks is the one telling you that you need to be on the call, right? So there's that problem first, which is like leadership says one thing, but they act another way.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Another one is people want to feel, they want to fit in. And if the overall culture is one where people are always trying to be available and trying to one up everyone else with their availability, then, you know, it's hard to be the one person who's standing out in the cold saying, I'm not going to answer that email on the weekends, or I'm not going to participate in that meeting on Saturday, or I'm not going to say no, even though I'm on vacation. No one wants to feel like they're not the team player. So it's really it's a leadership and a team thing primarily to begin with. That's where the expectations are set. And it doesn't matter. It's like culture. It doesn't matter what you say. Culture is simply the byproduct of consistent behavior. Mm. And so is, you know, workplace norms. Like if everyone's just rushing all the time, then so are you. You're going to be doing the same thing. That's what people do. They want to fit in. They want to make it seem like they're part of the team. So, you know, there's a lot of things. And there's also, of course, some people don't want to let other people down. And so there's that, which is a good trait. But of course, it's not healthy if, for example, you're on vacation And you think letting someone else down would mean you taking vacation. But of course, that's not letting anyone down. You're entitled to that vacation. You should be taking it. Right. But some people have a hard time with that. So it's challenging, but it really comes down to leadership, setting the proper expectations, and also making sure not to set certain expectations, which is that, you know, one expectation that's pretty common in our industry, which is software, is just grow as fast as you can. And if that's the expectation, like, that's all that ultimately matters, and all sorts of other things start to fall by the wayside.
Yeah, it's like if your mission is growth at all costs, like, there'll be a tremendous cost to be paid for that, right? That's kind
of the, and tied to that, let me just add this, to that is not even if, like, yes, you're right, but a lot of times it's couched in things like, you know, their mission is not like to grow at all costs, but it's like to be the world's number one, whatever. Well, there you go. Like that, yeah. If you want to be the world's number one, whatever, that means you've got to grow at all costs, right? Yeah. Or to be, you know, the best, whatever. It's like sometimes the definition of that is what creates the unreasonable expectations, even though initially that's not what's intended, but that's ultimately what it means.
Well, I was talking with Scott Belsky about some of this stuff, and he used a phrase that I thought was really interesting. He called it insecurity work. You know, it's all that work that you do because you're not really sure if it's expected of you, but you do it anyway, or you like do 20% more than what's expected of you because you want to make sure that you're covering all your bases. And, you know, I think sometimes leaders, managers take advantage of that, right? They get really unclear about expectations because they would rather people be scrambling and insecure and like maybe even overworking because it looks good for them.
Unfortunately, I think in some cases that's true. Another thing is that a lot of businesses, especially again in our world, aren't built to last. Mm-hmm. They're built to last, let's say, 3 or 4 or 5 years, and the end goal is to sell or to be acquired or to merge or whatever. And so sustainable practices aren't top of mind because it's like, we're going to be done with this anyway. So I don't care how many people I burn out because, like, hey, we're going to sell this damn thing for $400 million or we're going to be the next $1 billion, like all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, I think, you know, we've been in business for 20 years. We want to be in business for another 20 years if we can. And if you're in business for the long term, which is, by the way, pretty much every business sets out to be in business for the long term. It's only technology companies typically that are like trying to get bought and sold. Yeah. You know, if you're in it for the long term, you also should be thinking differently about sustainability and what it's like, because hiring new people, finding good people, training people, that's really expensive and really hard. And if you have great people, you should want to keep them. And the worst way to keep someone is to burn them out. Like, sure, they're going to leave.
So what do you do, there are a lot of managers listening to this. What do you do when you're trying to establish a healthy culture, but somebody doesn't seem to want to, you know, sort of sit under that leadership, you know, that you see them doing unhealthy things? Like, how do you, as a manager, then how do you steer them back on course?
Yeah. You remind them, you speak to them and you remind them that that's not necessary. Hmm. You know, so, there's been situations in the past where someone new came on board here at Basecamp and they would send, you know, post stuff to, we don't use email, but we use Basecamp, but you post stuff to Basecamp, doesn't matter what you use, like on a weekend. And that was the culture they came from. So they sort of just brought it with them and they wanted to show that they were a go-getter and, you know, on top of things. And so you'd have a talk, say, hey, you know, I saw you posted that thing on Saturday or whatever. And by the way, it's okay to do that if, like, for example, you didn't work on Thursday and you're making up some time on Saturday. But if you do that, I would make sure to let other people know that they don't need to respond. Mm-hmm. You know, say like, hey, I'm posting this on Saturday because it took Thursday off and I'm just working a little bit on Saturday, but, you know, you don't need to get back to me till Monday or Tuesday. Like, just if that's the case, be clear about it. If the case is that you've put in a full week and you're working on the weekend, we'd say, like, we don't want that. Like, there's nothing that's that important that it can't wait for Monday. Unless, of course, there's like a legitimate emergency, which is a totally different level of thing. But if you're working on Saturday, like, you don't need to. There's no reason to. We don't want you to. Wait till Monday, and that's fine. So it's just a matter of gentle reminders and pointing out situations where people don't have to do things, not just when situations when people do have to do things. And being fair about it, going like, hey, I understand that the desire to be on top of this, or you got something on your mind or whatever, but the problem is with communication software specifically, you tend to, when you say something, you're not speaking into a void. You tend to pull people in, because people get notifications and whatever. And so it's not harmless to speak out loud on Saturday. It's actually harmful, because other people are now going to feel obligated perhaps to respond. And that's how this sort of thing goes. And so that's why you want to be very careful about that when you see that kind of behavior.
I love your point about how we need to be thinking about our companies and our teams as a product in itself, you know, not just the product we're producing or the service we're producing, but the company itself is a product. And a big reason is we want to attract great talent. And when we're trying to recruit great talent, like our company is the product that we're trying to sell, right? But I think so many companies, and you point this out in your new book, It Doesn't Have to Be Crazy at Work, they focus on the end product, but they do that at the expense of the process itself. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the product, or I'm sorry, your company has to be your best product, because the company, the product, is what you use to make everything else that you do. Mm-hmm. You know, the way you work, how people feel at work, how rested people are, how thoughtful and creative people are, and how fair and kind they are, and how much they trust each other. Like, all these things are the things that you need to have on board in order to do great work. So if you want to make great products, yeah, you can brute force it, I guess, sort of, but you're going to lose a lot of people in the process, and that's going to be bad for your product. So when you think about your company as a product, you think about it a little bit differently, which is, how do I improve it? How do I iterate on this? Where are the bugs? Like, companies have bugs too, just like products do. It's like, what doesn't work very well around here? What's confusing around here? Why aren't people doing this, or why are they doing that? Like, what are the decisions that have been made in the company to encourage people to do certain things? Like, in a product, everybody would know that certain designs or certain experiences encourage certain behavior, or that there's a sort of a golden path. Like, if you use it this way, this is the outcome you'll get. The same thing is true in companies, but I don't think people think about them that way, and they should. So we're always iterating on how we work, how we think, our benefits, you know, our approach to work, our approach to being kind to one another, to making sure people are well rested, the whole thing. And we're iterating on the company as if we were iterating on a product. That means not letting things sit just the way they are, but, you know, looking at them frequently and making changes when necessary.
So I want to talk a little about you and your personal process, because you've been doing this for a very long time. As you mentioned, one of your projects is it called The Distance? Is that right?
It's sort of looking, yeah, it used to be. It used to be called The Distance, which was this podcast we did where we were focusing on highlighting companies that have been around in business for 25 years or more.
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore, but the archive is still online.
Yeah. And it's fantastic, because, you know, you're really, what you're doing is you're trying to counter this idea that, you know, the companies are something that are here today, gone tomorrow. You know, you go through this cycle of, you know, you build the company, you get funded, you sell it, you know, whatever. And just, you know, what would it look like to build something that lasts? But I think in many ways, sort of like you were talking about how we have to treat the company as a product, I think we have to treat ourselves in the same way, right? Like, mm-hmm. we have to have a process for ourselves that will sustain us over the long term, so that we're not just crashing and burning and refreshing constantly. So when you think about your process and all of these projects you've done over the course of time, and many of them in partnership with your business partner, David Hanemeyer Hansen, where do your best ideas tend to come from, Jason? Like, when you think about those ideas over time that you've had that have really stood out, like, where did those ideas come from for you?
Yeah, they typically don't come from spending time at work. They come from time outside of work. They come from perspective gained by staying away from work for a while. They come from a really good night's sleep. Those are the places I think that the ideas come from. I mean, it's rare that, like, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and I come up with what I would consider a great idea or something like that. It's more likely that I'm doing that in the shower in the morning, or if I'm going for a walk through the woods in the weekend, or, you know, even at night when you're dreaming, you come up with some of this stuff. I think being well rested and having a good perspective and checking out of work is very helpful for work. I think that's also lost. But people think that more hours means, like, better ideas and more work. I don't really think that that's the case at all. I think there's a law of diminishing returns, and some significant diminishing returns, especially if you're not well rested and you're not sleeping well. So I think those fundamental things, like taking care of yourself, eating well, exercising, and sleeping well, have so much to do with what you're capable of as a human being in all respects. But it has a huge impact on actually what you're able to do at work as well. So that's where it all starts for me. I don't have a daily routine in terms of, like, my work day, or how, you know, what I do in the morning versus what I do in the afternoon or anything like that. I just say, like, 8 hours is plenty of time to do great work. In fact, I was just, we wrote about this a little bit in the book, but I just had this experience again. My family, we just went over to Amsterdam for 3 weeks, and the flight from Chicago is about 8 hours from Chicago to the airport near Amsterdam. And you're on the flight, and it's like, you look at your clock, your watch, and you're like, man, it's only been 4 hours. And you look at it again, it's like, oh my God, it's only been 4 hours and 45 minutes. Like 8 hours is a long time.
Right.
That should be plenty of time to do great work if you actually have those 8 hours to yourself. So for us at Basecamp, the key is to make sure that everybody has a full 8 hour day to themselves and they're not pulled away constantly by meetings and interruptions and pings and chats and all that stuff. So we're very careful about that. But that all, like, that's the fertile ground. I think you need good sleep, good rest, good perspective, good time away, and also a full 8 hour day to yourself so you can do great work.
And that's the real trick, right? Because I think sometimes we trick ourselves. We get back to the insecurity work thing. Meetings make us feel secure. Meetings make us feel like we're making progress, right? And so I think, Paul Graham wrote that great essay, Maker Schedule versus Manager Schedule.
Yes.
And he talked about how managers have the luxury of calling speculative meetings. You know, hey, right, let's get together and speculate. Meanwhile, all the makers on the team are like, are you freaking kidding me? I've got like 4 hours of stuff to crank out today, but sure, let's have a meeting. Why not? And so that perspective that you're talking about, this idea of let's give people all the space they need to be able to, let's hire great people, first of all. Second of all, let's put them against important work, but then let's give them the space and the tools and the resources to do their work. What a novel idea. And yet—
Well, totally. The key is though, and you said it at the end, which is the key, which is the environment matters. Mm-hmm. Because you can hire, everyone's like, oh, it's where you want to hire the best people in the world, the great people. Of course, everyone does. But if you put those people in a bad environment, you're not going to get their best work. And a bad environment is one where the day is fragmented. People don't have any time to themselves, or they have like an hour here and there, or 15 minutes between this and between that. Like, great people are not going to be able to do great work in limited amounts of uninterrupted time, flat out. It's not going to happen, which is why a lot of people end up working late nights and on the weekends, is because those are the only times they aren't being bugged at work. It's not that there's more work to do. It's that they're not able to find the time at work to do the work. So I think the environment is more important initially than the people. The environment has to be great, and then great people can do great work. But a bad environment will stunt great people. They won't be great anymore. They'll be maybe good. And that's a shame to them. It's disrespectful to them, I think, right, to create an environment where you bring them in and say, we want you to do the best work of your career, and then like, don't let them do it. That's really unfair.
Yeah, I always tell managers, listen, you are the shepherd of all of these people that report to you. You're the shepherd of their body of work. Like, you are responsible for helping them unleash their best work. What a tremendous responsibility, right? And they look at me like, you with stone cold eyes, as if it's hitting them for the first time. But that's the reality. Your job as a manager and as a leader is not to do the work; it's to unleash the work of other people. But that, you know,
and to protect
a lot of people,
their time. I think protect their time and attention. Absolutely.
Yeah, but I know a lot of people are listening and they're saying, "Well, but you don't understand. My organization won't let me do that." So for people who feel like maybe they're trapped inside of an organization, they say, yes, Jason, yes, I agree. I need to create more space for people to do their work. But I've got all of these, you know, bits of shrapnel coming at me from the organizational hierarchy. What would be some advice you would give to those people about how to get started doing this?
Well, that's a great question, because it's easy to talk about these things, right? And people are like, well, I have no power. And I think that's a big part of it. And this is probably true in life in general, which is you got to figure out the things you have control of. Because if you keep pushing on things you have no control over, you're just going to exhaust yourself. So figuring out, first of all, what control do you have? If you're a manager, you have a lot more control and opportunity and power than if you're not. If you're an owner, you have even more control than a manager. You know, some people only have control purely over themselves and their own work. And that could be a matter of, you know, if I don't like being interrupted all day by other people, you know, asking me questions they can figure out themselves, and the next time I have a question, perhaps I shouldn't interrupt somebody else. I should look for it for myself. So, you know, model the way you want the world to be and begin to influence people that way, if that's all the control that you have. If you find yourself being someone who's always checking email on the weekends or whatever, a work email on the weekends, like, delete the phone, the work email app, if that's what you're using, or Basecamp or whatever you use, or Slack or whatever thing you use, delete it on your phone and reinstall it on Mondays. You know, think like do whatever you can do to push back against your worst impulses as best you can, of course, and then also understand what you're in control of. So if you're a manager and you want people to be able to do some of the things we've been talking about, like figure out a way, and it's really hard to change a whole company. Maybe the people above you won't let you do some of these things. I bet you could protect people for one day a month. Like just pick one day, the first Tuesday of every month, for example, like work really hard on making sure everyone gets a full 8-hour day that day. Schedule no meetings, push things off, avoid all this other stuff, and give people one day a month. And what you'll see is that people want more of those 1 days a month, and they want 3 days a month, and they want a week a month. And then you can then show, you can build some momentum that way versus trying to change the whole organization in a way that I've been talking about, which is going to be very, very difficult to do. So small wins, little things you can do that are within your control, either personally or in small teams, and sort of build on those wins from there.
And you'll begin to see, the organization begins to see the results of that too, which is, yes, I think, important. Like you need to be tracking and monitoring and be able to say to your boss, hey, by the way, since we started doing this, look at what's happened with the work or with the team or with the morale or whatever it is. There was one organization I work with out of, I think it was out of Little Rock. They established what they called no-fly zone time, which was basically 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday, where you were under organizational mandate not to be interrupted. I mean, just 2 hours a day, but that 2 hours a day was like gold to them because they knew like no meetings, no phone calls, no emails, no expectations. I could just crank on my work for 2 hours. It sounds like a little thing, but it was huge to them because it was predictable time to do their work.
Yeah. I'm glad to hear that. That's a great thing to try. Part of me thinks though that it's sad that we have to like even do that. That people have to, but you know, that being said, I'm so glad that they're doing that versus the alternative, which is of course nowhere near as good. So I love that they're trying that, and that's a great method. And hopefully like that can extend to 3 hours, and then 4 hours, and then 8 hours, and then 2 days a week and longer and longer. So again, it's about taking small steps. And also just getting a sense of where your organization is and how open the organization is to change, because you can't pitch seven things to change at once. It's just not going to happen. You got to really know that the appetite for change in an organization.
For sure. All right. Just a couple super quick questions. Is there a book that has had a tremendous influence on your life that you think everybody should read?
Yes. I read this recently, so I can't say it's had an impact on my like long-term life, but over the past few years, big impact. It's called The Manual. And it's actually a Stoic writing. It's translated into English. I'll send you a link to it because it's just easier that way. But I think there's many other books called The Manual. So let me find the right one for you. It's only 60 pages, and it's not even 60 full pages. There's some essay. It's a series of basically 60 essays, and some of them are like two sentences long. Some of them are a page and a half long. So all in, it's probably like 35 pages of writing, and you can read it in an hour, and it's profound. And it's had a big impact on me as of recently, and I'd recommend everyone read it, primarily because it's so accessible and it's so fundamental and so profound. And there's very few things I think you can read like 30 pages of and feel like you've got a whole new look or a new way to look at things. So I'll send that link to you, and then you can put it in the show notes.
I'll put it in the show notes. Were you a reader of Stoic philosophy before that?
A little bit. I've read a few books. One of my favorite books is called A Guide to the Good Life by, I forget the guy's name now. Anyway, you'll find that. I can send you a link to that too. That was a wonderful introduction. That was kind of the first book I read on Stoicism, and a really wonderful introduction to some of the core principles of it, put in a very relatable way. So I'd recommend starting with that too. Although the manual is, you don't need to read anything else. It's a great, great start and end, in fact. But and there's some other things. I've read meditations and whatnot. And I've read other, I'm not like, I don't consider myself a Stoic in any way in that sense, but sure. I think some of the fundamental principles are extremely valuable and a great way to look at life, or a great lens to look at life through.
All right. So along those lines, final question. This is going to sound like one of those questions that, I ask at the end of every episode to try to, throw at people to see what they'll say. It's not, this is the first time I've ever asked this question, but for some reason, as I was preparing for this conversation, I was like, I really want to hear what Jason has to say about this. And you can also by the way, you can punt this question if you don't want to.
Okay.
So at the end of your life, assuming, I mean, a lot of people want to be cremated and, you know, spread or whatever, but at the end of your life, if they could put one word on your tombstone, just one word, what would you want that word to be?
Oh my God. That's so, it's such a difficult one. Let's see. let me think for a second. Fair. Mm. F-A-I-R. Fair.
Why fair?
I think that's ultimately like the best we can do is just try to be fair about everything we deal with. People, issues, concerns, just be fair. So that's kind of what I'd like to be.
I love that. That's great. Yeah. Well, Jason, you have been a huge gift to those of us who are out here trying to do crazy work and helping us not be crazy at work. I've been following your work for a very, very long time. Just phenomenal work that you and your partners have done. So thank you so much for everything. If people want to learn more about you, they want to learn more about Basecamp, they want to learn more about the stuff that you're putting into the world, what's the best place for them to go?
Well, I think probably Twitter is usually best. So at Jason Fried, F-R-I-E-D. We also have a blog, Signal Versus Noise. It's at signalvnoise.com. And then since you have podcast listeners, we have a podcast as well. So if you'd like listening to podcasts, check ours out. It's at rework, rework.fm. And we talk a lot about these sort of issues that we were talking about on this podcast on a biweekly basis. So that's another place to go check us out.
Jason, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
You bet. Thanks for having me on the show. I really enjoyed it.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or jump on the email list at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe to get every episode delivered as it's released. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. See you next time.